back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast I know of where one of the hosts is named after Kawhi Leonard. He's not really named after Kawhi Leonard. I'm talking about Lenny, not me, obviously. But the great thing about having a dog with a slightly ambiguous name is you can change the origin story and tailor it to your audience. Like, with some people, I'll say Lenny Dykstra, you know, from Philly. Well, I'm saying that a lot less these days. With some people, I'll say Lenny Kravitz of Mice and Men for the literary crowd. So these days, Kawhi is hot, so Lenny is claiming him, unless the Raptors lose and give up 3-1, in which case we've never heard of Kawhi Leonard on this program. Before we get to today's episode, I wanted to say thank you to everyone in Seattle who bought tickets to our live. I was going to promote the live show and try to, you know, move tickets, but the tickets have been moved. They are sold out July 22nd at the Croc. Super, could not be more excited for this. My friend Danny Kelly, really one of my oldest internet football friends. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but Danny and I were Seahawks nerd friends back when I was a business journalist and spent far, far too much of my time on Seahawks message boards and, you know, live tweeting updates on the practice squad and that kind of thing. If you're live tweeting, here's some career advice. If you have a job and you are live tweeting about, you know, preseason and the practice squad, maybe that's your calling. Could have figured that out a little bit earlier, I think. Anyways, Danny's going to be there. We're going to have a super secret celebrity mystery guest. That's not Lenny. Lenny's going to be there in some capacity. I know that's ambiguous, but it's deliberately so. But there will also be another super secret special celebrity mystery guest that I'm going to announce very soon. But I'm just really, really pumped. And of course, the audio from that show, by the way, we will release in podcast form too. So my guest today is not from Seattle, but he can relate to having your soul, your heart, your hopes, your dreams crushed after a Super Bowl. Welcome back, Charles McDonald.
Thanks for having me on. And I appreciate, you know, the Super Bowl 51 reference. For those of you who don't know, I am unfortunately a Falcons fan, but that's my team till the end of time.
That's my lot in life. I've said this before, I've always felt grateful to the Falcons, because I really think it takes the heat off of the Seahawks loss to the Patriots. I mean, I don't know which one's worse. It feels to me like,
I know which one is worse.
Which one do you think the Falcons one is worse?
Oh yeah, easily.
I think the Falcons one is worse from a fan perspective because it's more frustrating, because the Seahawks one had an element of like randomness in it, whereas the Falcons one was like watching, you know, a slow crushing like inevitability.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to someone about it, someone I work with about it, and it's pretty much if one thing doesn't go wrong that went wrong, then the Falcons probably win that game. But it was just the perfect sequence of errors, and all of them had to happen in a row for them to lose that game. But you know, that was 2.5 years ago, so I think I've moved on to a degree.
Have you?
But it still sucks. No, I haven't.
I think the one worst thing about the Seahawks one is we're not going to do this all show, guys. I promise we're going to get past this pretty quickly. But there's two things. One, it's frustrating to me because I think it's so misunderstood. Like I always get the Seahawks should have passed the ball to, given the ball to Lynch or whatever, and I don't believe that to be true. I think it was the wrong play. I swear to God, I'm not going to do this again. But I feel that it's A, misunderstood, and B, there is a GIF that is retweeted, that is sent to me constantly. Whereas the Falcons one, because it was a little bit drawn out, I don't think there's like an iconic screw up, you know, like one singular moment. But 28-3, I guess is that memeable sort of insult that you probably get a lot. Well, anyway, since Charles is a Falcons fan, but he obviously follows the division really closely. And as I told you guys, I wanted to start looking forward to the 2019 season, talking a little bit about these divisions, going division by division and previewing some of these teams. I don't want to do like record predictions necessarily, but I want to talk about who got better, who got worse, kind of the big picture and where these things stand. And we're going to start with the Atlanta Falcons. But before I do that, I want to tell you guys about a new advertiser. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues like depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, grief, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything you share is confidential, and it's so convenient. You can now get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. If you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time. There's no additional charge. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option, and my listeners get 10% off your first month just by using the discount code Lenny. So why not start today? Go to betterhelp.com/Lenny. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. BetterHelp.com/Lenny. Two thoughts on that before we get to the Falcons. One, it sounds like an awesome service. Honestly, that's something I would have loved to use at various points in my life, especially due to the convenience of it. And I can't count the number of times I haven't gotten help, whether mental or physical, just because of the obstacle of going out, finding a doctor, and driving somewhere. So I love that these remote options are now available. Second takeaway is really Lenny. That's where we are now. Lenny has overtaken me in the discount promo codes. It's finally happened. BetterHelp.com/Lenny. Okay. The Atlanta Falcons. Before we get to this, Charles, before we get to the preview, just to look back at last season, they finished 7-9. The Pythagorean win expectation was 7.8. So for those who don't know, that's based on points, what the record should have been based on points. So a little bit better. Offense finished 8th in DVOA. Defense finished, do you know off the top of your head?
I'll guess like 30 or 31.
31. You nailed it. So I think just kind of as I was looking at the depth chart, looking forward to next year, there is a sense that the offense is going to be a lot better than the defense. Obviously, the defense was really racked by injuries, and we'll get to that. But I want to start by talking about that offense and Matt Ryan and that wide receiver core. I mean, it kind of feels like last season, because of the injuries on defense, because they were so bad, because of the record, a very, very strong offensive season, a very strong season from Matt Ryan was a little bit overshadowed.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not that the offense was, you know, at 2016 levels, but when you just look at the raw numbers, Matt Ryan, you know, at least like in a touchdown to interception and yards point of view, he did, you know, got close to those numbers. It wasn't as ruthlessly efficient as 2016, but they had a pretty good year on offense. I mean, especially when it came to throwing the ball, Calvin Ridley had a phenomenal rookie year, and it could have been even better if he didn't have, you know, just some careless drops sprinkled in throughout the season. And even with that, he still scored 10 touchdowns. Mohamed Sanu was kind of like the perfect third receiver to play with Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. You know, they couldn't really run the ball that much last year, but it didn't impede them that much in terms of scoring points. And they kind of figured out towards the end of the season how they were going to run the ball. But, yeah, it was really frustrating because, at least statistically, 2017 was a kind of a down year for the offense, and the defense helped them get into the playoffs. And this year, it looked like, oh, you know, this could be a team that's finally got a defense. We all know that they could play offense, and then the defense fell apart completely, and the offense kind of rebounded. And it's like you just never have two things that match at the same time, and unfortunately ended them going 7-9 and missing out on the playoffs.
Oh, again, the defense is his own. There's problems there, but I think you mentioned the wide receivers. You could argue, by the way, I think with great evidence that the Falcons have the best trio of receivers in the NFL. Forget just the division. And then they've got Austin Hooper, who had a bit of a breakout season last year at the tight end. I think at running back, you know, Devonta Freeman's been injured on and off. Tevin Coleman's now in San Francisco, so he's gone. So you got to think they're going to need health from Freeman. They didn't really bolster that group that much. I drafted some later round guys, but I'm not concerned about any of the Falcons skill players. What I wanted to ask you about was the offensive line, because I was really surprised, Charles, that they went so heavy on the O-line in the draft. I think we were mocking a lot of defensive players to them early on. I don't know what you expected. And then they go out and they take two offensive linemen in the first round, Chris Lindstrom, the guard, out of BC, who Michael Jr., who co-hosts with me a lot, is a former offensive lineman, likes a lot. And then Caleb McGarry, who is a tackle from Washington, so I've watched him play a lot. He's okay. I thought that was a bit of a reach. But were you surprised? I didn't think the offensive line was that bad. I didn't think they were one of the better lines in the league, but I didn't think they were terrible last year. Were you surprised that they devoted so much resources to that position group?
Yeah, a little bit. And even you have to remember that before the draft, they even signed James Carpenter and Jermon Brown to, you know, not small deals. And I thought that both of those guys were going to start going into the season just because of how much money they were given in free agency. But clearly one of them's going to be on the bench with Chris Lindstrom. I was a little bit surprised to see them go offensive line at 14, but I guess, you know, Ed Oliver went eighth or ninth to the Buffalo Bills, and Christian Wilkins got picked up right before the pick by the Dolphins. So, you know, I guess two of their top defensive tackle targets were off the board. So they decided to go with Chris Lindstrom. And I thought that was a little surprising, especially considering the money they had just devoted to the offensive guard position. But I guess that was obviously something that was a huge priority for them going into the offseason. And I remember before the offseason started, or right after the regular season ended, Dan Quinn pretty much said, the only people on this offensive line who are safe are Jake Matthews and Alex Mack, and everyone else can be replaced. And lo and behold, they did replace everyone except for Jake Matthews and Alex Mack. So, yeah, I hope it pans out. The Caleb McGarry trade up back into the first round was a little surprising, because I did expect them to be their pick in the second round, but I just didn't think that they were going to trade up into round one to make it happen. But, you know, there were some rumors that came out that the Patriots were interested in them. So hopefully those guys pan out, because it's really the only thing that could derail a super potent offense.
I love the Patriots were interested in him. That follows a player. That's always great. I was a little distracted, by the way, when you mentioned James Carpenter, because I forgot that they signed him, and I was looking through my internet archives. James Carpenter, Seahawks legend, you might remember, and more notably, when he went to New York, somebody on the internet, I think, posted his, like, Tinder, maybe this was pre-Tinder, I don't know what was pre-Tinder, profile. He posted a dating profile, and it's really great because he describes himself, I want to say, as big and beautiful in the profile. That was a very important Seahawks Twitter moment many years ago. But I guess, you know, when you lay it out like that, I think it's more just that there were so many needs, in my opinion, on defense, and they've some of those picks, which we'll talk about momentarily, haven't really panned out the way they liked. So, which is interesting, right? Because this is a team that's helmed by another former Seahawks legend, Dan Quinn, and they just haven't had success drafting and developing really talented defensive linemen.
Yeah, it's just kind of a weird situation, because especially with Vic Beasley, I mean, in 2016, he had the breakout season that I had been wanting when they drafted him eighth overall in 2015, and I was, you know, it kind of finally felt that the Falcons had a pass rusher, and that they hadn't had since John Abraham was in there back when Mike Smith was the coach. So you kind of think that you're going to have this next great edge rusher, and then since the 2016 season, he's just completely fallen off the map. And I know that in 2016, it's not like he was a guy that was racking up a ton of pressures and just consistently dominating every offensive lineman that he played against. It was more that he got a fair amount of pressures, but converted a crazy amount of his pressures into sacks, which is not sustainable, but hopefully you would still see the pressure rate climb as he continues to get used to the NFL. And that just hasn't happened. Now you're at a place where he's just not doing much of anything on the field. Like, I remember there was a 6-week stretch this year in the middle of the season where he played 70% of defensive snaps and had like two tackles, which is kind of hard to do. Like, I feel like you could put literally anyone out in the stands, and if you tell them you can play 70% of the snaps over 6 weeks in the NFL, I think your average person could get two tackles. They might not look pretty, but you can make it happen. So he just went to having no impact, and now it's really just Grady Jarrett trying to hold together a defensive line with a little help from Jack Crawford on the interior. And you got to hope that Tack McKinley can take that next step, because, you know, he was kind of on fire for the first month of the season, and then it slowed down for him a little bit. So there's a lot of uncertainty outside of Grady Jarrett. And you're just kind of banking on a bunch of young guys to get better. But it's not like they've really had a ton of success developing guys outside of Grady Jarrett.
Yeah, Tack and Vic combined for 12 sacks last year, which, you know, for your two leading edge rushers is just not enough production from that group. They franchised Grady, right? Off the top of my head, Grady got the tag.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, so, you know, I didn't expect them to go out and compete for one of the premier free agents, and there really weren't a lot of those free agents didn't really hit the market. Which is why you saw the Chiefs, you know, with that trades happen. But I did think they would go a little bit higher in the draft, perhaps. Now, last year, I think we have to recap the injuries. Grady was out, I think, a little bit as well. But the main ones were Deion Jones missed 10 games, the middle linebacker, the heart of that defense, who's obviously been phenomenal and is so important to how they do things on that side of the ball. And then Keanu Neal, did he miss the entire season? Or he went down the first game, I want to say, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, he got hurt.
The backbone. And also by the Ricardo Allen, the other safety was out pretty much. Oh God, I forgot how battered this defense was. You pretty much gutted the entire backbone of the defense. So, you know, to some extent, when we're talking about, okay, well, they didn't really do much on that side of the ball. They're just really hoping a lot of these guys come back and they're healthy. They're hoping that some of those cornerbacks like Trufant, who was seen as honestly at one point one of the premier cornerbacks in the NFL and is really taken a step back, they're hoping that he reverts to form in some way. I don't know how realistic that is, Charles. Like, I don't look at this even with the guys coming back online, even with even hoping, I suppose, that like a Beasley or Trufant looks a little bit more like they did earlier in their careers, I just don't see enough talent on this depth chart.
Yeah, I mean, it's slim looking. And I guess Dan Quinn is, he's putting the onus all on himself because he's going to be taking over as a play caller on defense this year. So I guess he feels like most of it was scheme. And even on the, there's an article the other day that came out, I think it was on The Athletic by, I think, Jason Butt. And he was talking to Dan Quinn, and Dan Quinn said a lot of it was just scheming, guys not being in the right place. But, you know, at the same time, you're supposed to be the defensive coach last year, so if you see these things, why aren't you being more hands-on with it? But, you know, I guess we'll just see how it goes this year. But, yeah, it's not really looking like a defense with that much talent. Hopefully, you know, getting Keanu Neal and Ricardo Allen back would be big pluses. I guess the only real positive we saw last year from all these injuries was that DeMonte Casey got to break out a little bit, and he led the league in interceptions. So if he can kind of transition into being a nickelback like they're going to have him play this year, that could be a plus for them, but it's just something we haven't seen him do yet, really. So that's also a question mark. But the defensive line talent is just really concerning, just because you have a lot of guys that haven't really played well outside of little spurts, and now you're just relying on them really to kind of save your season.
Yeah, well, I have some good news for you. The Falcons hired Bob Sutton as an assistant. that's the Chiefs defensive coordinator, for those who don't know. The Quinn, by the way, taking over play calling is really interesting because, like I was saying, it is fascinating how much this defense has struggled despite having, you know, a head coach who's very, very defensive minded. And I gotta think if the defense doesn't improve this year, that his job's probably on the line. So that said, I don't want to do a record prediction, but I kind of want to just do this as a binary. Do you think that the Falcons will be better or worse than they were last year?
I think they'll be better just because the offensive line's gotten better and just having these guys back on defense. I mean, Deion Jones is really, like, he's one of those rare middle linebackers that can really make the defense go. I don't know if they're recordly better, but I do think they'll be a better team just by those offensive line additions and getting Deion Jones and Keanu Neal back. And, you know, those are two of their very, very key defensive playmakers.
Well, a team that would be hard for them to be better, aside from making it to the Super Bowl, than last year, and I imagine is the prohibitive favorite to win the division, the New Orleans Saints, 13-3 last year, 11.5 win expectation. But, you know, when you get to 13 wins, it's pretty hard to top that. Offense finished 4th in DVOA, defense finished 11th, an interesting 11th that we'll get to. Now, the offense is interesting to me because when I think about teams that have the potential to regress, to me, the Saints seem like a glaring possibility. And I feel like a lot of people don't agree with me, Charles. Like, the Saints' hype is really intense right now. I mean, just hearing the conversation around the league about Super Bowl, likely Super Bowl contenders, and I do think the Saints belong in that category, but I have some concerns about this offense, and I have some concerns about Drew Brees based on what we saw from him at the end of last season.
Yeah, it wasn't really... It was almost like he was a different quarterback to close the season, and I guess it kind of started with that Dallas game, because I remember on Thanksgiving, you know, it's fitting, like, the last great Drew Brees game of the season is on Thanksgiving against the Falcons. But
wait, was that the game where he broke the record, or they like, no, that was the Washington game where they, do you remember that game?
Yeah. In this
where
game,
they stopped the game for like 20 minutes to present a laminated certificate.
Yeah, that was against Washington, but against the Falcons, he was throwing touchdown passes to guys I'd never heard of, which was really fun
true.
To watch after I was stuffed from Thanksgiving dinner. But, you know, we just didn't really see the same Drew Brees after that game, because he didn't play all that well against Dallas. Against Tampa Bay's crappy defense, they won the game, but he still didn't light them up. And then versus the Panthers on that Monday night, it was just kind of like him and Cam Newton taking turns trying to figure out who's trying to lose the game. So Drew Brees is a pretty big question mark to me, because we're getting to a point where you have to wonder if his arm is just going to just magically recover for the start of the season, or if what we saw to close the season was what we're going to see in the future. And even in that playoff game against the Rams to close the season, there were a handful of throws that he missed where you just don't see the same juice behind it. So I think that that's quietly a pretty big concern. And even with that, you're probably going to see like some regression with deep balls, some regression just with the overall inefficiency of the passing game. I'm inclined to think that this division is a little bit more open than people are making it seem. And I think the Falcons, Saints, and Panthers like all have a very clear path towards winning the division this year.
I agree. And so Brees did finish the year, you know, with best passer rating in the league, or no, best passer rating of his career. Oh my God. Okay. 32 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 8.2 yards per attempt. But when you zero in on the end of the season, weeks 12 through 17, even leaving out, you know, January, 19th in passer rating, 25th in QBR. Now, you mentioned that in that Thanksgiving game, he was throwing to guys you never heard of. That's another reason I'm a little bit concerned, I guess, or not as optimistic maybe as I could be, just because I thought the Saints were not that. I mentioned that I thought the Falcons might go out and add guys on the D-line. I actually thought the Saints would go out or would maybe target a high-end wide receiver in the draft, right? Because this receiving group after Michael Thomas is not great. You know, they get Ginn back, who was hurt some of last season, and they've got Cameron Meredith. Then it's, I think this is probably Keith Kirkwood is probably one of the guys who caught a touchdown in that game, you know, and who was perplexing. And I guess the counter to that is they did add Jared Cook, who is probably a great fantasy pickup. I don't do fantasy advice, and was actually really, really good in Oakland last year, and will add an interesting dimension to that offense. So that will be helpful. As far as the running back position, they lost Ingram, but and I forgot this. When someone asked, a Saints fan asked about the position group a few weeks ago, and I forgot they had signed Latavius Murray. I don't really see that as a high impact signing. This is still far and away the best offensive line in the division, even losing Max Unger. They did draft interior guy Eric McCoy, who could potentially replace him. But you know, and then they signed Nick Easton out of Minnesota. But setting aside the Unger situation, I think just having those guys be healthy, there's so many Pro Bowlers on that line. I'm not worried about it. So I don't know. I'm not incredibly worried about Drew Brees, but I think there's not a ton of talent to bail him out, and then the trends are a little bit concerning. The defense, Charles, so just to kind of recap last year, they started off horribly. And there was a lot of, wow, this is the same old Saints defense. But then they bounced back. Do you think they're, I guess, also a regression candidate?
Yeah, I'm not sure, just because I don't know which one we're going to get. Because, like you said, the one to start the season, I mean, week one, they just got absolutely smoked by Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think they gave, like, 48 points to start the season. And even later, in like earlier in the season, they gave up a 5-touchdown game to Matt Ryan. It was just not pretty. And then they kind of picked it up towards the end of the season. Like you said, they ended up finishing the season 11th in DVOA, and I imagine it had to be a huge jump from where they started to the end of the season. But one thing that kind of concerns me is, they're not going to have Sheldon Rankins, I don't think, because he suffered – I don't remember exactly what it was, but it seemed like a pretty long-term injury towards the end of the season. And he was really starting to have a breakout season in terms of providing that interior pass rush. And now you kind of look at that and say, where does that pass rush come from? Because he was becoming pretty consistent in that regard. And they still have Cameron Jordan and guys like Marshawn Lattimore. But overall, there isn't really anyone on this defense that kind of scares you. Those top two guys are pretty good, and hopefully Marcus Davenport can break out. But I wouldn't be surprised to see this Saints defense hit some regression next year too, just because it's not like they were really facing the toughest offenses either when they got back towards the end of the season. I mean, they played Cincinnati, they played Dallas, who has a decent offense, but they're pretty prone to playing slow in spurts. Tampa Bay, Carolina, when Cam Newton was dead. So I think that the defense is probably somewhere in between this, like, historically bad unit to the one that closed the season. But I still don't think this is a defense that's going to scare a lot of people, just because they're going to have to find someone to replicate that pass rush that Sheldon Rankins was bringing them. And it doesn't seem like they have anyone on the roster that can do it right now.
Yeah, it's a very Stars and Scrubsy defense, right? I mean, Cam Jordan, who just got paid, is phenomenal. At times, Lattimore's been phenomenal. I think Sheldon Rankins is excellent. I've always liked him, and losing him is huge. He tore his Achilles, by the way, so he's going to start the season on the pup list. They did add some depth on the D-line, but, the run defense has been the strength of this unit, and it's allowed them to force offenses to become one-dimensional, which, because their own offense has been so high-scoring, has really, really helped that secondary. So if the run defense slips a bit, even though they did sign, Malcolm Brown, I believe, and they've got Onyemata, which is some nice depth there. But if it does slip a bit, I think that's going to affect the rest of the pass defense in sort of unforeseen ways. It's a linebacker group that is pretty mediocre, even though I love the DeMario Davis signing last year, and that really paid off. Outside of him, you've got Anzalone? It's Anzalone, I think, and A.J. Klein. Anzalone's the guy with the blonde, the flowing hair.
Yeah.
I believe. Is it blonde? I think. Anyways, he's got flowing locks. So the group is fine. I thought they might bolster the secondary a bit. They've been kind of, they drafted at safety. I like the Florida, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson late in the draft. So that's an interesting one. But, Eli Apple, who they signed near the end of last season, sort of up and down. He was an improvement, but wasn't that hard to be an improvement playing opposite Lattimore. He was penalized a lot. So he's playing a contract year. It'll be interesting to see kind of if a little bit more experienced time in that unit helps him out. They do get Patrick Robinson. That was the other signing I really liked. Last year they signed both DeMario Davis and Patrick Robinson were two free agent signings that I singled out. And then Robinson went out and got hurt like right away. So getting him back in the slot's going to help a lot. But there's just a lot of holes in this defense you can kind of pick apart if you're one of the better offenses in the league.
Yeah, and I think that Marcus Davenport having a big second year is almost essential for them now with the Rankins loss and some of the, I guess, inconsistency in the secondary. Because, if Davenport doesn't come up, they don't really have anyone else that's going to scare you as a pass rusher. I mean, Trey Hendrickson is a guy that hasn't really broke out. Malcolm Brown had some flashes early in his career, but hasn't done much outside of being like a solid run defender over the past couple of years. So the pass rush could be hard to come by if Davenport doesn't take that next step. We all know Cam Jordan's going to do his thing, but there are a lot of questions outside of that. It's kind of like the Falcons defensive line where you know, you have Grady Jarrett and some dudes that you hope take that next step, and the Saints defensive line is very much set up in the same way right now.
So better or worse than New Orleans Saints?
I think it's slightly worse just because, you know,
yeah.
I don't think Drew Brees is probably going to match that same efficiency he did to start the season, and losing Sheldon Rankins is a big, big blow. So I think they're slightly worse than they were last year.
I'm with you. I agree with that. All right, before we get to the mailbag, I want to take a quick second and tell you guys about ZipRecruiter. Finding a new job is a lot of work. What if you had your own personal recruiter to help you find a better job? Now, ZipRecruiter's technology can do that for you. Just download the ZipRecruiter job search app, let it know what kind of jobs you're interested in, and its technology starts doing the work. The ZipRecruiter app finds jobs you like and puts your profile in front of employers who might be looking for someone like you. If an employer likes your profile, ZipRecruiter lets you know, so if you're interested in a job, you can apply. No wonder ZipRecruiter is the number one rated job search app. And based on a third-party survey, 7 out of 10 people who found a new job on ZipRecruiter increased their salaries. These are the results of a 2017 survey of over 500 ZipRecruiter users who got hired for a job they found on ZipRecruiter. My listeners should download the free ZipRecruiter job search app today and let the power of technology work for you. Do not wait. The sooner you download the free ZipRecruiter job search app, the sooner it can help you find a better job. All right, hit it, Mike.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
Now it's time for the mailbag, which is brought to you by Tissot. Tissot, the official watch of the NBA. Shop at us.tissotshop.com. Cheese Sando. Oh, by the way, of course, if you leave a review in my iTunes and it's positive, I will answer the question. We are blowing through these, so leave a review because we will get to it fairly soon. It's no longer a two-month wait period for these reviews. Cheese Sando asks, which team does Rosen get traded to once the Dolphins complete Fish Tank? So, by the way, before we get to that, did you see the, you mentioned Fitzpatrick lighting up the Saints defense. Did you see his no-look passes coming out of OTAs?
Yeah, I did. That guy is just a treasure. He's the only active quarterback we have with a 6-touchdown game and a 6-interception game. There's nothing that he cannot do.
It's just amazing, man. It's just so reliable every year. Like, of course he's going to have an amazing game. Of course he's going to throw no-look passes. Like, we've done this with Ryan Fitzpatrick, guys. We know who he is. It's just so amusing. I actually feel like he is the worst fish tank quarterback there is, right? Because he's going to win games. He is absolutely, assuming he beats Rosen for the job, which is what it's looking like right now. Like, you do not want him on a tanking team. But to address the question, you provided that Rosen's gone or they trade him or whatever, and he shows some flashes. You know, it's got to be a team that's obviously not. Well, at that point, I think he starts to enter backup territory. But if there's a team that would want him, right? Because if he has another bad year, I don't know if a team. Then teams will start to view him as more of a kind of like a Brock Osweiler type.
Yeah, I don't, because if the Dolphins are in a place where they want to move on from him after this year, I don't even know if they could get much for him at this point, because he'd be on two teams in 2 years, be three teams in 3 years. So I don't know, but if there's a team that still believes in him at that point, maybe the Chargers would make sense, because Philip Rivers is going to play forever. Drew Brees. I mean, even the Chargers, they were rumored to want him before he got traded to Miami, like a few months ago. So maybe they'd still be interested. But like you said, at that point, he'd probably just be viewed as a career backup by the NFL, unless like some team just absolutely loves him pre-draft. Yeah, like
I was gonna say the Patriots
could be a team. That'd be annoying.
He's just such a case study in how much your NFL career is predetermined by what team you play for as a quarterback, and how things can be really stacked against you. Speaking of, Noah Johnson asks, is it too early to be excited as a Bills fan? We'll get to the Bills in the division preview. I think they are a team that should be better, right, for various reasons. But, you know, it really all just comes down to what you get out of Josh Allen. BGG80 asks, is there anyone on the shipping container who could beat you in a race? I thought he was going to ask who I could beat in a race. Let me ask you, Charles, because you're a fan of the Dan Le Batard show. Who do you think would beat me in a race?
I'll go with Roy, and apparently, you know, Chris is surprisingly athletic with all the clips that they show of him running. It's pretty funny. They even talk about him playing baseball, stuff like that. So I'll go with Roy and Chris, and I don't know if I buy that Dan is actually as fast as he says he is. I'll think he could be him.
I think it's entirely – so the question was ambiguous because it just says race. It doesn't say how long the race is. If it's 100 yards, a lot of those guys could beat me because I have – like I'm just smaller than them. But the longer you go, like once you get to 400 yards, I think I could beat all of them except for Billy, I think, can run distance. I'm not 100% sure about that. And then once you get to 800 yards, I could beat all of them very easily. Naturally, 1980 asks, I know you're not a Trubisky fan. How good of a season does he have to make you believe he was worth the pick? Oh, that's a longer conversation. Somebody just snitch-tagged me. Some Bears fan snitch-tagged me to Trubisky saying, hey, Mitch Trubisky at Trubisky 7 or whatever. Which, don't do that, guys. That's so lame. You know, Mina Kimes said, if you were just average in the playoff game, they would have won. Yeah, I stand by that. Okay, he was terrible for 70% of the game. He was great. He had a few great throws and drives, but and then there's a well, it's because of Cody Parkey in the defense. I'm sorry. How many points did they give up? 15? Okay, your quarterback should be able to put up more than that. Anyways, to answer the question, I'm not out entirely on Trubisky. I just don't think he's lived up to his picks so far. To be worth it. For them to want to pay him, he has to play like I would say Jared Goff has played. How about that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's just when you watch him, you're like, ugh, it's just not clicking for him yet. You know, maybe year two with Matt Nagy will help him out. But I know his QBR was pretty high this year, but a lot of it just seemed like stuff that might not be like easy to do again this year with just some scrambles. And like you said, in the playoff game, he was butt for like the most for 80% of the game and had a few nice throws, but it just wasn't enough. And I mean, you want to talk about regression teams, the Bears, that one's coming like a landslide.
Yeah, I'm with you. We'll get to that division. I have a lot of concerns about the Bears. Final question. I'm actually going to loop two questions together. And look, I've spent a lot of time talking about this guy, Justice West the First, who also would like me to know that the name Justice with a C is pronounced Justice, because I was talking about Justice Hill, and I think I may have called him Justice Hill or something. Isn't your podcast co-host, Charles, named Justice? Or is it Justice? Because it's spelled with an S.
No, it's Justice, you know, like criminal justice.
But the podcast, I should plug your podcast, right?
Setting the Edge. Yeah, we actually recorded an episode last week.
Was it a preview of the NFC South?
No, it was just an off-season review. I think you like it.
So you're not competing with us. I'll check it out. Yeah, so go check it out, guys. It's a good podcast. I definitely do listen to it, even though I didn't listen to the last week one. He asks, what would you do with Mariota? And then Pac-Man Jonestown asks, is Mario good? Will we ever know? Well, like, I've covered this a lot. We talked, Dan Orlovsky and I talked at great length about Mariota and sort of how we don't really know much about him, or it's very, very hard to evaluate him. I think... At this point in his career, you would take the under on him, not just because of what he's shown in the inconsistency, despite the fact that he's been in challenging circumstances, but also because of the health. It's going to be very interesting just to see if he plays, if he's like an above average quarterback. I think that puts the Titans in a pretty difficult position, which really is a good segue, by the way, to the next team, because it is a team in a very similar situation with their quarterback. And that is, it's funny because it could be the Panthers if you talk to some Panthers fans, but actually it's the Tampa Bay Bucks, who finished 5-11 last year with a win expectation of 6.4. The offense ranked 12th. The defense ranked, guess?
They were 32nd, I'm pretty sure, in the NFL.
They were the worst defense in the NFL. So tons of change on the coaching side of this staff. We've got now Bruce Arians helming the team. Well, let's start there. Do you think that's good for the team? BA's in charge now.
Honestly, I thought it was good for the team, but I don't really know how much it'll change because, you know, the thing with Arians that he made his trademark with, and, you know, pretty much every stop with every quarterback he's played with, whether it's Ben Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, Carson Palmer, you know, they really like to be aggressive and throw the ball downfield. And That's something that Jameis already does. It's something that he was already doing last year. Him and Fitzpatrick with Todd Monken. I mean, I don't think that the aggressiveness is going to be that much different. It's just going to be, can Jameis kind of make it through the season without playing like a moron at times? And I don't know if anyone can bring it out of him, anyone can coach that out of him, if they haven't been able to by now. So I don't really think that Bruce Arians changes much for that offense, at least in the passing game, because it's still going to be aggressive, still going to be vertical based, still going to try to get the ball deep to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. So I don't really think that Arians is a huge difference maker on offense for them.
Yeah, you know, like in addition to speaking at length of Mariota, Dan and I talked a lot about Winston, and I talked about how he's inconsistent, but it's not game to game. He has these like patches of really great quarterback play, right? I pointed out that from weeks 10 through 16, he was like top 10 in almost every category. And he does this. Jameis does this. He's so similar to Fitzpatrick in that way. I'm very curious to see how he comes out, right? Because that's that sort of an issue. Like, can he come out the gate with consistency and show good decision making and not lose games for the team? I mean, there's no way this defense could be worse. It's statistically impossible. Famous last words. But on offense, I do think I'm a Bruce Arians fan. I was a Todd Monken fan as well, but I just don't think they did a ton to get better on that side of the ball. You know, we talked about how Jameis was hampered because the running game was so bad, but I don't really see this running game looking a lot better. You know, they added Andre Ellington, who is most notable in my mind for the time, who ripped out one of his dreads. It was like one of the most painful dread ripouts I've ever seen. But
yeah, I don't
anyways,
but
you remember it was like, oh, that was a rough one. The line is pretty much intact. They paid Donovan Smith way too much money, but you know, that's just what happens in the NFL these days. But so at least there's kind of consistency on that front. It's still a very good pass catcher group, but they did lose Adam Humphries. DeSean Jackson and Jameis never really connected. But I think, you know, Godwin could take another step forward. O.J. Howard is one of the better tight ends in the league at this point. Really, him and Bray, that might be one of the best tight end groups in the league. But overall, yeah. I don't really see this defense taking a massive step forward. Or offense, pardon me. The defense, so I mentioned they added Arians on the offensive side. They also made changes on the defensive side. He brought along his old friend Todd Bowles. I'm kind of curious. I think, I mean, like I said, they couldn't be worse, Charles, right?
No. It'd be almost impossible for it to be worse than last year. Because, I mean, if you're worse than last year, now you're talking about, like, legitimately all-time bad defense. I don't think it'll be worse. I mean, but still, when I look at this defense, it still doesn't really scream out, this is going to be a defense that takes a massive step, even with, you know, the addition of Devin White and Todd Bowles, and they're going to get Vernon Harkins back this year, but it just seems like this defense doesn't have a lot of talent still. I think that Devin White might be an upgrade over Kwon Alexander, and if he plays as well as he did in college, then you're talking about one of the best linebacker duos manning the middle of that defense with Levante David. And once you get past that, I don't really think there's that much to get excited about. I mean,
yeah,
you still have to play Bo Allen a lot of snaps because they paid him a lot of money two off seasons ago. He's going to compete with Vita Vea and Dominican Sue. Sue is kind of an enigma because I think we all saw in the playoffs he absolutely
started trying
back to that. Yeah, he can play like at that dominant level when he really wants to, but during the regular season with the Rams, I thought it was wildly inconsistent. I know he had good PFF grades, but I just, you know, you just didn't really see the down-to-down dominance that you saw in the playoffs with him. We all know Jason Pierre-Paul, it doesn't look like he's going to play this season. So their front seven is strong at off-ball linebacker, but you don't really have the pass rush component that you kind of need to get it to click. Unless Vita Vea just comes out and plays out of his mind and legitimately does turn into like that next, I guess, big nose tackle that can rush the passer.
Right.
But even then, that's kind of a stretch because it's not like he was great at doing it last year. But maybe he can be the next guy to do it. And the secondary, I know they're probably going to benefit a little bit from Bowles, but I don't see a single name on this defensive back list that is supposed to, you know, make me hopeful about this group unless, one, Vernon Hargreaves can take that step under Bowles. And I know that Bowles ran a ton of man coverage while he was with the Jets. And if you just look at Vernon Hargreaves' stats from 2017, he played a lot better in man coverage than zone coverage. So maybe that can help him out. But and it wasn't even like he was a lot better. He went from being completely awful to like a below average cornerback. So that's a pick that hasn't panned out for them. So maybe they're going to need some of these rookies like Jamel Dean or Sean Bunting to take the next step and help them feel a competent secondary. But I think this might be, you know, the coverage just might be too bare for Todd Bowles in year one. And I just don't see how this defense doesn't finish in like the bottom five again this year.
In the NFL, yeah. I mean, the secondary, Charles, you were 25. You would be the oldest person on that. Well, I think Hargreaves might be 25 too, but it is so, so young back there. Yeah. I mean, they threw a ton of draft picks at the unit, and we'll see if that works. I actually like that approach generally. I like drafting a ton of cornerbacks and safeties, but it's just not a strong unit. You're definitely right to point out that off-ball linebacker is the strength of this team with Lavonte David, who's very, very good. I do think Devin White could be better than Quan Alexander, who's become a bit overrated, in my opinion. Okay. And I love Devin White. I love him in this defense. I love him in a Todd Bowles defense that's, you know, they're going to switch to a 3-4, and given sort of the creativity that Bowles can employ sometimes with his pressure packages, I think Devin's a great fit for that. The only case I can make for the Bucs defense is they lost 92 adjusted games, according to Football Outsiders, they have this stat called adjusted games lost looking at injuries, and that is a record. Okay, so they were the least healthy team beyond defense in the NFL last year. And I guess that's part of the reason why I think they're going to be better this season, just because of how bad, not only how bad they were last year, Charles, but how much they underplayed their talent level. Now, again, I don't think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be the worst team in the division, but I think they could be better, and you might get some flashes with the help of some of those additions. Before we get to the last team, wanted to just take a quick break and remind you that Tissot is the official watch of the NBA. Each one of Tissot's timepieces delivers quality performance and traditional luxury. The Tissot Chrono XL is a great watch for those looking for a sporty chronograph with Swiss technology at an unbeatable price. While the Tissot PR100 family of watches brings together sporty and feminine details for a collection that is bold, romantic, and ideal for the modern woman. Shop Tissot at us.tissotshop.com and at select watch and jewelry stores nationwide. Can't wait to do that ad right during the AFC. We're doing the AFC West soon, and you know, going to be some nice transitions for Andy Reid coming off of a clock ad. The Panthers finished 7-9 last year, 7.8 win expectancy, 11th on offense, 22nd on defense. I want to start with the defense instead of the offense for this team, because they had it was the biggest signing for this time of year. And it's a signing I didn't really expect. Gerald McCoy, as I talked about at the beginning of last week's episode, ended up in Carolina, which is also transitioning to a 3-4 right now. So we've talked about teams where you and I have had questions about the D lines on all of these other three teams. The Panthers will be rolling out a front of Gerald McCoy, Dontari Poe, and Kawan Short. What is your reaction to those names?
It's awesome. I think it's honestly the perfect group of guys when you just look at it talent-wise if you wanted to start a 3-4 defense. And
you think so?
I think that all three of them kind of play off of each other well, because obviously, you know, Dontari Poe is your classic nose tackle or one tech, but he still has some juice, even though Kansas City kind of ran him to the ground while he was there, but he still got some athleticism to him. Kawan Short to me is kind of like this flex guy where you can play him at three and he can really rush the passer there. You can play him at one and he can be an anchor there. And then Gerald McCoy is like your classic penetrating three technique. So I think they don't want to get into a place where they're just kind of, I guess, two gapping all the time, where they have Short and McCoy head up on the offensive tackle, Poe at nose, and they're kind of playing an archaic brand of defense. I think they kind of need to still stay upfield and penetrating and just kind of allow these guys to do, just allow these guys to be, like take advantage of their own skill sets. And I think one really interesting thing that they did this year is obviously drafting Brian Burns out of Florida State in the first round. So now you can get to, you can run packages where you can get Poe, Short, and McCoy all on the field at the same time. Like, let's say they want to run a bear front, and they can have Poe at nose and then Short and McCoy at three techniques. So now none of those guys can really get a double team block on them from a running back or another offensive lineman. And then you have Brian Burns rushing off the edge. I mean, there's a lot of ways that they can get creative with their fronts and set up one-on-one blocks for all this talent that they've stockpiled. And, you know, I really just like the contrast of skill sets between the three of them. And I really like the way that Kwon Short kind of gives you that flexibility to do whatever you want up there, just because he's so sound at pretty much any like non-defensive end, defensive line position. Kwon Short can really hold his own there.
So the transition makes sense to me, I think, just given the way defense, as you alluded to, given the way defense in the NFL are going, given, right, that it's kind of ridiculous to even talk about base defenses anymore, and they obviously want these guys on the field as much as possible. I'm a little bit concerned just because Short's been so effective rushing from the inside, that you're kind of taking that away from him, but it does make sense given the linebacker talent that they've got, you know, having Burns back there, but Shaq Thompson giving him a little bit more room to roam. And I don't think it really affects Kuechly's game. It's just, there's so much talent, man, in this front seven. Yeah. It's absurd. So ultimately it probably doesn't really matter, although we'll see early on. And you might remember Ron Vare last year took over defensive play calling from Eric Washington, who's still on the staff, but it'll be interesting. It's clearly the strength of that defense, right? Because they did fix some of the issues in the secondary last year, bringing in Eric Reed during the season, signing him to an extension during the offseason. Bradbury and I guess Dante Jackson is probably going to be a starter opposite him at cornerback.
Yeah.
It's not a bad unit, but I would say it's certainly the weakness in this group.
Yeah, and even with that, the secondary being a weakness, there's still a lot of upside with it, because I think Dante Jackson is a guy that, you know, his highlights as a rookie are pretty ridiculous. I mean, just legitimate 4.3 speed, and you kind of, it's very evident on tape with his playmaking ability. So, you know, if him and Bradbury can take those next steps and legitimately develop into like good starting cornerbacks, and this defense should easily be the best in the division. I think it probably is, even if they don't. And even with, you know, the 3-4 thing is kind of interesting, because you kind of look at the pieces and it doesn't make sense initially, but you have to assume like they're going to be running nickel most of the time. So
right.
I think the only big thing that, yeah, I think the only thing that really matters with the Panthers moving to a 3-4 is that their edges are going to stand up, but really everything else should be pretty similar. And I think that we saw them draft Burns and Miller, and I think that they're looking at a defense that can be really versatile with their blitz packages too, because now you have McCoy, the penetrator, and that's going to open things up on blitzes for Kuechly and Shaq Thompson. And if that secondary can kind of hold together and the young guys get better, man, like, I think that this defense could really, really see a big improvement in 2019.
Yeah, harken back to some of those Panthers front sevens from a few years ago that were just so filthy. And the secondary, you know, these things work together, obviously. Your secondary benefits a lot from having a fearsome pass rush. So even if perhaps they didn't, you know, massively upgrade talent-wise, or these guys don't take a massive step forward, these young guys, they're just going to benefit from the fact that their jobs are going to be a lot easier with that front seven if it lives up to its potential. I'm a little bit worried about the other side of the ball, Charles. You know, I'm a Cam fan, and I thought he was really, really playing well before he got hurt last year. I thought this offensive line was going to be trash. They were way better than I expected. Shout out to Taylor Moten, you know, stepping up big time at tackle. And I thought, I'll just say it, I was wrong about the Norv hiring. He was much better than I thought he would be. I trashed it. But again, before Cam got hurt, I was really impressed by the creativity His ability, he was getting the ball out quicker. His completion percentage was up. And then he got hurt. And I think not only did he get hurt, he was hurt a lot longer than people thought, right? So the biggest question mark for me is just, you know, well, I'd say there's a couple. One, is Cam 100%? He had surgery in January. And two, does he have enough weapons? Because yes, DJ Moore looked good. He lived up to, I think, his pick, but you know, he's their number one receiver. After him, I know you like Curtis Samuel, but it's like Torrey Smith, Chris Hogan's on the team now. It's not, definitely not one of the scarier receiver groups in the league.
No, it's not. And I think one issue that North kind of had this past season was, I was just kind of confused why they didn't get Curtis Samuel on the field more. I mean, there was a stretch towards like the middle and end of the season where it seemed like almost every time he touched the ball, he was scoring a touchdown. Now, obviously, you know, that's going to regress because I think he scored 10 touchdowns on something like between 50 and 60 touches, which is just not going to replicate itself this year. But overall, it's kind of like the Panthers defensive back room where you have guys that have potential. You just kind of need to see them put it together. And, you know, when I watch Curtis Samuel, I see a guy that's can be one of the best route runners in the league. It's just, he just needs to get more snaps and be able to prove that he belongs up there just about every snap for the Panthers. I think DJ Moore is kind of interesting because he's not like your classic receiver that's going to beat man coverage and just get open that way. He's kind of more like, I guess like a Percy Harvin type of player where you just need to get the ball into his hands and clear out the way. And he's going to make something happen there. So it's weird. I mean, they have guys that we know have talent, but just either haven't gotten the reps or just haven't consistently showed it on the field yet. And then you have, you know, guys like Torrey Smith where he's probably over the hill, but if he makes a team, he's going to see a significant amount of reps. So it's kind of
Greg
interesting
Olson,
receiver group.
By the way, speaking of
or Greg Olson
over the
too.
Hill,
and you can even throw in,
yikes.
Yeah, and you can throw in Ian Thomas who had some promising moments last year, especially later in the season. So it's just kind of a big question mark. Their entire offense is with from Cam to how these young receivers step up to does Greg Olson have it? But I think if Cam is healthy, they always have a chance to win that division, especially with what I think the defense is going to be.
Yeah, and you know, I'm with you on Moore. He's not your traditional number one. I mean, I think he might be under 6 feet off the top of my head. He's not a big dude. He is so quick and elusive, right, when he has the ball, but he's not gonna win a lot of contested catches. He also, by the way, has a bit of a fumbling problem, as I recall. So that's security is a little bit of a concern there too. But it's like a lot of it with him and McCaffrey and Samuel. North's got all these interesting pieces to work with. But he doesn't have that like big body dude. Again, we don't know what Olsen's health is. He is coming back, but he just doesn't have that big body dude that Cam has traditionally had as an option. So we'll see. Again, I agree. It totally depends on Cam's health. Really loved what we saw out of him, out of McCaffrey last year as well. Maybe he was a little overused. They did add CJ Anderson. I just have some questions about, you shut your mouth. I love CJ Anderson, but,
I do too. I just thought I was just laughing because it was funny that later in the season, Ron Rivera was like, well, we need to find someone to take some of the load off of McCaffrey. Like, dude, you literally have CJ Anderson on your team. And he played well when he got the ball too, and they just cut him for some reason. I always thought that complaint by Rivera was kind of funny.
Who did they add as a second back? I feel like they had Artis Payne still, whose value is mainly
drafted,
as a fantasy name generator, but oh, they drafted Elijah Holyfield out of Georgia, right? I think so. Yeah,
they signed him after the draft, and they drafted Jordan Scarlett, the running back out of Florida. So, you know, there's some competition now, but last year was just kind of
fun. No, I agree. They need better depth behind him than that, especially because you want to see McCaffrey used as a pass catcher as well, and you know, see him continue using because he is so versatile that way. So, Panthers, better or worse?
Oh, I think they're better. I think McCoy is kind of being undersold by, you know, especially fans of the Bucs. He can still very much play, and I think that interior duo, especially with Short and McCoy, is going to be huge. front seven is still solid. And I guess the big question is Cam, but I would like to assume he's going to be healthy for the start of the season.
That's really good,
so
right?
I think they're a lot. I think they're a lot better than they were last year, just based off the strides their defense can take.
Yeah, I think that just that front seven has the potential to be the best in the league. I'll say that, and I think Cam, if he's healthy, is going to be a big difference maker for them. So they should contend for the division, in my opinion. But again, it really comes down to Cam's health. And this podcast, as always, comes down to our final segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Dinks and Dunks are brought to you by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, Charles, as always, four questions, one from Lenny. First four are from me, though. And number one is, the four quarterbacks in this division are named Cam, Drew, Matt, Jameis. My question for you is, what is the perfect quarterback name?
The perfect quarterback name?
Like, if you just heard that name, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that guy can throw.
Oh, I think I'm going to go with Matt Ryan because he's the best quarterback in the division. What?
Matt Ryan is a terrible – the first name and the last name are interchangeable. No, come up with a name. Like, if you heard this name, like Dagger or Flash, like, if you were drafting a fictional team or creating one, what would you want your quarterback to be named?
Something weird, like something weird, but not too weird. Like maybe
not too weird, yeah.
Brock, but you have a Brock Osweiler. I still think, yeah, Brock is like a strong name. Like, I don't know, just the Brock, like the CK, it brings it all together. You think that guy would be pretty good just off the name alone.
That's true. That was honestly, if Brock Osweiler was named like Glenn, there's no way he would have been drafted where he was. You're 100% right with that take, and there's no way he would have gotten that kind of payday if his name was like, you know, what's an even worse name than Glenn for a quarterback, or a perceived worse name than Glenn?
Steve.
Steve. Steve! Steve Young!
Steve Osweiler.
Oh my god. Yes. Well, I actually think Steve Osweiler probably gets drafted pretty high, too. Question two. If you could cook any dish perfectly, just you were guaranteed to always make this thing perfectly to perfection, what would it be?
Oh, man. Gumbo, for sure. I could eat that all day. I see my mom make it before. It just takes way too long, so I haven't really learned, but I would love to be able to make that dish 100% perfect.
Gumbo also you can make with like different ingredients. So you've got like versatility in there. That's a good one. I would do an omelet. I think if like, I could always be guaranteed. I know it's like easy, but
yeah, I was gonna say that's very low risk.
I know. Well, that's just who I am. you're revealing a lot about myself. I'm sort of the Derek Carr of cooking. I just want that low risk completion. Where does Kevin Durant play next year? Where does he not play next year?
I think Kevin Durant he's going to play at Golden State again. Like I could just see him accepting that 1 year deal, and then
he's not going to do the 1 year deal.
Or it's the thing is a player option, max. Right?
Yeah, but he can make more money with a max. Anyway, so you think he would take the player option? I mean, but it's also very possible that Golden State would give him the max. You think he would take
that's
that?
True. Either way, I guess the max makes more sense, but I think he's going to stay in Golden State now. I'm not sure I see him going to the Knicks after how all of this ended. But maybe you want to get at least one more ride, and it seems like the organization might appreciate him more than people on Twitter do for sure.
Well, he's going to be really beloved there if he stays, right? Even though they'd be paying him like, you know, $30 million not to pay. I feel like after everything that's happened, he like finally, like Golden State will get like the fan base and the organization, like they will appreciate him and cherish him. So maybe. Question four. If you could add an NFL franchise to any city in America, what would it be?
I think I would pick like some college town, maybe even like if we could put a team in Alabama, like in Birmingham or close to Tuscaloosa, I'd like to see how they could, compete with Crimson Tide and Auburn and stuff like that. So pretty much any college town, but I'll roll with Birmingham or Tuscaloosa for this one.
You think that – I feel like nobody would care.
Yeah, I would just want to see how it could happen. Because weren't the Birmingham Iron, like, they were getting some support before the AAF?
Oh, that's true. They
closed.
Did have the, yeah, the AAF. I mean, I guess St. Louis is also there as a team that possibly
yeah.
deserves
if you
to
ask
have
me
an
in a,
NFL.
If you ask me in a year, I'll say Oakland.
Oh, right. Of course. That's a good one. Okay, question five, as always, comes from Lenny. Chuck! Well, it's familiar. He's calling you Chuck. I imagine you think I'm going to ask something related to 28-3, but I'm not. That's a played-out joke. I reject the premise. So I just have a simple question. I don't have access to the internet, so I need to get all of my information from this opportunity to ask experts like yourself for information. When did the Falcons last win the Super Bowl?
Well, Lenny, it depends on what you mean by win. If you want to use it in the normal sense, they've never won. But
wow.
At the, yeah, okay, so they haven't won. But Robert Alford pick six, that almost felt like winning, you know? That felt pretty good. The picture with Brady looking at him in the distance.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's a good-